Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did it change history? Good evening, and welcome back to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago.
We give each movie a memory score and then rewatch the movie to see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remember. And then we score the movie again.
With me as ever is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you?
I am great.
Wow.
I am great.
Me too.
I'm great in an alternative universe where the word great means something else.
Yeah, I've been to that alternative universe. I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Otherwise, I'm great.
Good.
As we're both great and good, you must have, I think, a very exciting anecdote of the week.
I've used it up already off air by showing you the Jaffa Cake dispenser.
For those of you who weren't with us off air, Sam has a Jaffa Cake dispenser. You put Jaffa Cakes inside the dispenser. You take a Jaffa Cake from the bottom of the dispenser. I've just explained what a dispenser is. It's really obvious.
Yeah, it's also just very simple. It's just plastic. But, you know, I mean, other biscuit cake things are available, but Jaffa Cakes are the best, aren't they?
Well, I agree, but there is a whole debate to be had about whether or not the Jaffa Cake is a biscuit or a cake.
I think there's an answer to it, though, and it's something to do with when a cake... Wait, I think it's when a... I can't remember what it is, but when, like, a biscuit gets left out for too long, it becomes soggy, but, like, a cake doesn't. So it's a cake, but it's still up for debate, I reckon.
I think it is up for debate, but for what it's worth, I think the Jaffa cake is cake.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that one.
Good. Otherwise, it would be called the Jaffa biscuit, right?
Well, exactly, yeah.
Exactly. On that, we can move on to a listener question, which this week comes from Clark, if indeed that is your real name. And Clark is in the United States of America in a place called Trenton. So thank you very much, Clark from Trenton, whose question came through just today. He said, I've just listened to the Eragon podcast. Very funny. He enjoyed it very much. And he said that he absolutely approved of the notion that Jeremy Irons was in a completely different movie to everybody else. And he said, what is another occasion we can think of when another actor or actress performance was completely different from the movie that they were in? And for those of you who don't really know what we mean, Sam made the comment last week that he wanted to see the movie that Jeremy Irons thought he was in. So you've got an actor that's acting for all he's worth, ultimately to create disappointment. So can we think of another actor or actress who's given a similar performance?
I feel like I've seen one recently, but I can't quite remember what it was. But it is a funny concept.
Yeah, it
I
is.
Feel like it was an actress who was in something that shouldn't have been as serious as it was, but they were.
Yeah. That's kind of the idea. I mean, I have one that I think might give people an idea of the odd concept that we're talking about and that Clark from Trenton has asked about. Mine is quite controversial. Mine would be, I don't know the name of the actor, but they play the character Haldir in Lord of the Rings, the elf.
Ah, yeah.
He just doesn't seem to get that right, does he? It's an odd mix of very camp and very condescending.
I think I kind of want to say, weirdly enough, Kurt Russell in Sky High.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a nice segue into Sky High, which is the movie of the week. We went away and re-watched Sky High, which I seem to remember we scored Sky High. I gave it a 7 from memory. What did you give it?
I gave it a 6 out of 10.
Okay. Do you think your score will change?
We'll have to see, I think, yeah.
It's all about it's all about the discussion. And I was interested by the cast. And we always talk about cast. And I agree with Kurt Russell, who's hamming it up for all he's worth. And I thought the cast was pretty good. And I sort of did a thing about where are they now? because it's always fun to do with things. And I really just came up with two quite interesting facts that I had never noticed, hadn't put the two things together at all. So I there were two things. I was going through the cast. Where are they now? We all know where Kurt Russell is and things like that. And I guess we know Daniel Panabaker and things. But I didn't know, and these are the two things that I didn't know, was Kelly Preston passed away. I don't know why I didn't know that. Kelly Preston, who plays the mum, passed away 5 years ago.
I had no idea.
Yeah, aged 57, she died of breast cancer. And I didn't know that. And it made me quite sad. No. It made me quite sad because I thought she was good. And then I also hadn't put together that the actress Mary Elizabeth Winstead was in it. And I know who she is. She's been in many things. She was in 10 Cloverfield Lane, one of your favourites, Vampire Hunter, and she was in Fargo, the TV series, and is now married to one Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, Obi-Wan's wife, which is weird because she's also in Star Wars now herself.
That's right.
Ahsoka.
And I just had not connected all of those things together. So, I just thought that was interesting. And nobody else thinks it's interesting. I just thought it was. But, you know, shout out to Kelly Preston.
I thought it was.
Who sadly is no longer with us.
Yeah. I also didn't know Jim Rash was in this.
Yeah. He's somebody else that I spotted as well. Linda Carter, I knew. Bruce Campbell, I remembered being in it. I thought Jim Rash was actually pretty good. He's the guy from Community, isn't he?
He is, yeah. He's very good at this kind of role, I think, yeah.
Actually, to say something about the cast, I actually thought it was a very strong cast. I thought there was not a weak link in any of the younger actors. Kurt Russell, Kelly Preston were great. They all did their job pretty well, I thought, in this movie.
Yeah, it's one of those films, I think, where invoking the Cardellini manoeuvre is quite difficult because there's quite a few people in it that you would sort of give it an extra point for. It's very, I want to say, major's probably not the right word. It's very major cast heavy in terms of who's in it. Not just because of who was in it then, but looking back now as well. Obviously, you've said where they are now. And they've kind of made a name for themselves, some of them, yeah.
Yeah, so for example, the guy who played the glowy character, whose name I can't remember, Zach, he was in Succession for like 5 years. And received Emmy awards, and he was in Perks of Being a Wallflower and Cat Person, all really good stuff. And it feels like this is one of those rare movies where if you go to the Where Are They Now section, all of these child actors actually went on to do stuff, which is really fairly unusual.
Yeah, it's rare but welcome. Yeah,
it is rare but welcome. And there you go. So a really good cast. Really servicing the movie well. I didn't remember as well it was a Disney movie. When the Disney thing came up at the beginning, I'd forgotten about that.
So what it is, even now I still forget that it is, because it's... Well, I mean, there was a bit of trivia that I saw, which we'll come back to. But it is interesting that it is Disney, and it is a good start from Disney, I suppose, superhero-ish. I don't know what I'm saying. I had another good segue.
Go on.
Bruce Campbell, there's a few shots in this film where Bruce Campbell's in the scene, but the way the shot is positioned, it looks like there's a stand-in and it's not actually Bruce Campbell, but it's only for like one shot at a time. Like looking over the shoulder, it doesn't look like him from behind.
Maybe that's just true. Maybe that's what happens. Interesting, the Disney thing is interesting because I think this might have been a thing that would have come up later. But there were plans to have a sequel or maybe even to reboot this and for it to become a thing that Disney would pursue either as a TV series or a series of films. And that was actually still being talked about quite recently. And then when Disney acquired Marvel, it kind of went off the table because they then had a completely new, a different superhero universe to invest all their time and money and effort in, which I thought was interesting because you can see... you could have seen a sequel to this movie. You could have seen something that came afterwards.
Yeah, it's interesting though. I found something. Weirdly, I just came across it from just under a year ago where it says apparently, after seeing how successful the boys and Gen V have become, there is discussions of having a Sky High series. I don't know if it'll be a full reboot or if it'll have the old cast. It's a bit like Shark Boy and Lava Girl. They tried to come back with a Netflix film that just didn't work, and they didn't even get Taylor Lautner in it, so it's just some guy who doesn't have any lines. So I kind of don't want it to be that sort of situation. I kind of hope that if they do come back, it is successful.
I hope so too. I mean, as of 2024, the director of the film said that he would like to do a Sky High inspired project, but this one would be set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But there were
Right.
there was even a title for and everything for the sequel. It was going to be called Save U, as in Save
Oh,
University.
okay.
And all the characters would have been at university, they'd have graduated, and that was the sequel that they were planning to make. I would like to have seen that movie.
Yeah, I quite like that. That's clever in a way. Yeah, I'd pay for that.
I'd pay to see that. But as of 2024, as of about a year ago, no movement has been made on the TV series or the planned sequels or whatever, which is a shame. Because
Yeah.
I thought the one thing I quite liked about this movie was it was always in danger of being a teen movie with all of the teen cliches, and difficult love, homecoming, and all of that kind of thing, and then it was always in danger of just being another slap stick kids. Superhero movie, but it kind of sat on a very fine line between the two things, and at no point did it overdo one or the other. It was actually quite a nice script, nothing surprising, but the cast were well served by what they were doing. It was nicely directed, and I think it sort of stands up quite well all these years later.
Yeah, I think what I quite liked about it this time around is, especially in the last episode where you gave your score, I didn't really know that you liked it. So it's kind of interesting, and I'm interested to hear your score, that it sort of stands in that sort of sense of it's not just directly for kids, and there is a bigger audience out there for it that isn't just, oh, these kids are going to go and watch this and then play it in the schoolyard type thing. So yeah, it's an interesting one.
But it's true, it kind of comes over as, okay, so we watched it years ago, okay, you were a kid, you would have enjoyed it. It was definitely a father and son movie to go and watch.
Yeah.
And even now, kind of as a grown-up person, it still felt like just a really nice, fluffy, slightly derivative, but nevertheless perfectly serviceable movie. I didn't have any sense when I was watching it, and I kind of expected to, and at no point did I get that sense. I mean, of course it was cliche ridden, but that's the idea, right?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of moments that when, as an adult watching it, you'd think, oh, this is just ridiculous, but it still works. I think because you don't expect it to be as good as it actually is, so like the idea of Jim Rash's character being a bit of a clown jester type, that should be annoying, and then all the heroes turning into babies, that should be ridiculous. But it still works. Like, that's the best way you can get around it being a kids' film and an adult film.
There's a really good quote, which we don't normally do, but I'm gonna I normally would paraphrase it, but I think it's worth reading in full because this is by an actual writer and he probably expresses it better than I can. But I agree with everything he said. So this is Mark Harrison writing for Den of Geek, quite well known website for that kind of thing. And he says, "It's a cast made up of bright young things and cult favorites, and a script that goes postmodern without ever getting snarky. It's a real gem. It borrows from J.K. Rowling, John Hughes, Joss Whedon, and any number of comic books, and yet it still stands on its own. Next to the current superhero boom, it was so ahead of a time that a decade later, it seems sharper and funnier than ever."
That's quite well regarded, yeah.
And it has apparently developed something of a cult following since release.
Yeah.
And this is all before, as this references, this is all before the superhero movie was a thing. It was quite, it
Yeah.
was not original, but it was quite original for the time that it came out. You know, there had maybe been a Superman movie somewhere either side of this and things, but the whole superhero thing, Marvel, DC, that wasn't fashionable. This was a bit of a punt, really.
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, we've said about it coming back as a sequel or a spin-off type thing, but I do think if it came out today, like quite a lot of things have happened, it wouldn't do nearly as well because people are sick of it now. But back then, perfect timing, yeah.
Perfect timing.
And actually, this is probably an example of perfect timing for a film, yeah.
Right, and because of the superhero boom of the last 20 years, if you sat down now to watch this with a 7 or an 8-year-old, as we did 20 years ago, they would enjoy it every bit as much because there's then a common language that they understand about superheroes.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
And I definitely remember you being, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, because sometimes I think these memories are made up, but I definitely remember you being all superhero-y after this film. You liked Spider-Man, which had already been out by this time, but I seem to remember you thinking that you were Will Stronghold at some point, and, you know, and of course the whole father-son relationship in the movie is quite good fun. We would have enjoyed that, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I do think there was a lot of me pretending to be a superhero after this. Yeah, I agree with that one. It's just because I'm cliche like that. But, I, you know, watching it this time around, I did sort of recognise that father-son relationship. And it is kind of cool that both reflected in the movie and real life as well. Like, it was a relatable thing.
Yeah, and there's a kind of, you can go far too deep into these things, but there is a relatable thing about, you know, all children, young children in particular, tend to look up to their parents as being superheroes. And it's only when they get older that they realize that they aren't. They're all hugely flawed. And the same thing will happen to you at some point, and it will happen to them and them and in a long line of that. But imagine this, a world in which your father is an actual superhero and you're desperate to follow in his footsteps, but you don't have the same powers. So that's quite a nice kind of relatable story thing. I don't know whether that's too deep and whether the writers really meant that, but definitely you can read that into it, yeah?
Yeah, I like that, actually. It's a good opinion. Opinion might not be the right word. You know what I mean. It's like, it's a good theory. It's like the kind of book that you'd pick up and it would say, this is my theory. I don't know where I'm going with that.
No, but
that sounded mean.
But no, I do know where you're going with that. The theory is that there's actually something deeply psychological going on. It's almost kind of Freudian, although that might be mother. I'm never quite sure. But there's definitely something in that kind of all boys worship their fathers as superheroes until they realise that they aren't. Only on this occasion, it is.
Can I just say, War and Peace might actually be the best name in any film ever.
It's definitely the best superhero name of all time, War and Peace. Yeah. Actually, you're right, I did like the names in this. You know, they all have really good names. You know, Tommy Boomowski, Principal Powers, Nurse Specs, Lash, Speed, Penny Lent, Zack Attack, Zachary. There's really cool names happening here. Popsicle.
Ron Wilson bus driver.
Ron Wilson bus driver. I love that character, Ron Wilson bus driver. I thought it was super funny.
It's a proper Paul Blart Mall Cop type character.
Absolutely.
Which is probably a film we should also watch.
Yeah, I think that it might be. Steve Stronghold, Will Stronghold, Jetstream. They're just really cool. Everything, even the superhero names and then the characters' names, all really work together.
I think like that as well, the costumes are really good. Like, they didn't have to go that detailed or that hard with them. They just did, and it works, and it builds it up more and makes it work.
Yeah. The only thing I found mildly disappointing plot-wise was the invocation of the Spiderwick manoeuvre when I don't have any powers. Oh, goodness, I don't have any powers. What's high school going to be like the next day? Hey, I've got my powers. I just thought, maybe from a kind of, I know you have to, it's a children's movie and you've got to get through the plot pretty quickly, but there was an extra 5 minutes in there where he's still struggling with his powers. You know, it just seemed to happen very quickly.
Yeah. On negatives and plot points, actually, I do think this film might have plot holes. A couple of them.
Okay.
If they have a room that can stop powers, why not just use that around most of the school so that people don't use their powers when they shouldn't, like in the cafeteria, that kind of thing. My other one is towards the end of the film where the evil plan is hatched and they have to trap all of the superheroes in one room, not a single powered student or teacher could A, see that the twist was coming, or B, actually escape through a simple fence.
Yeah, I did think that about the fence. I just thought, well, that you're a superhero. You just, you know, the guinea pig could climb through the hole, or the guy could melt through it, or anything like that. It's just like, this is really silly.
Yeah, there's got to be like some other power that can walk through walls. I mean, if we're hitting guinea pigs, and that's a terrible way to phrase that. If we're at guinea pigs and sludge, then surely someone can walk through the wall or move the fence somehow, like even telepathically.
Well, actually, it's interesting, isn't it? The kind of twist at the end where they're all turned into babies and things, and that's fine, whatever. It's quite nice, quite good fun. But it wasn't quite twisty enough. You know, you could kind of see all along that the real bad person was going to be, you know, the slightly older gay, I can't remember her name, but Gwen Grayson. You could tell all along that she was going to be the real baddie and things like that. So, yeah. And when, you know, even like the, here is a picture of Sue Tenney in the yearbook. Well, hang on, that's Gwen Grayson. Even I can see that.
It's like the Clark Kent thing. Just because of those glasses doesn't mean it's not the same person.
Yeah. Well, then there's a little reference to that, isn't there? There's a little joke when she comes in and she says, and he puts his glasses back on. That was quite good.
Gwen Grayson is also a reference to Gwen Stacy and a Batman character with the surname of Grayson too.
Right. Did you know that the, you know, we're talking about the Where Are They Now cast. There was one thing, I didn't know whether to bring it up, because there's probably one person, DJ Daniels is his name, and he played Popsicle, okay? He was arrested in 2011 on charges of murder.
Whoa.
For which he was acquitted a year or so later. But he is no longer an actor. He's one of the kind of Where Are They Now? Well, actually, shortly after making this movie, at the age of 23, he was arrested for murder, which I will go to some lengths to say that he was found not guilty. He did not do it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But isn't, you got all these, you know, it just really struck me as really like this whole youth cast have all got something memorable about them.
Yeah. How often do you think the rejected students become supervillains?
Oh, every time.
Yeah. At some point they have to notice that there's a link between the two things, right?
Yeah, it's a breeding ground for supervillains. Absolutely. I mean, War and Peace would almost certainly have become a supervillain had he not worked in a Chinese restaurant.
Well, exactly, yeah. And he can That's a good point.
Sit down and talk to the nice girl and, you know, and point out that she, you know, you're clearly in love with this guy, and she was. I think she could have done better.
Then Will. Well, probably, yeah.
Yeah, War and Peace was, you know, that's it. Surely that would be better.
Yeah, whatever you're into.
but like it's you've got this guy. I think what I quite liked about Will Stronghold, he wasn't comic book attractive, was he? But for some reason, he has all these attractive women falling all over him. And he's got Gwen Grayson, who clearly is just using him to get to his father, which is another Greek tragedy moment right there. And then you've got a nice redhead girl who is just lovely, also throwing herself at him. What a guy. Get in, Will Stronghold.
Yeah. Good for him. It shows that anyone can do it.
He also had a famous dad.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, I mean, that's going to help. I tell you what I did enjoy about this movie as well. I enjoyed the soundtrack. I thought it was a nice reflection of the era in which it was made. I don't think there's much. Yeah. I don't think there's much of a score. There is a score, if you like, and it's by a guy called Michael Giacchino, who, by the way, won.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah, he won an Oscar. He did the music in Up, a few years later, for which he won an Oscar. But I quite like the the kind of early 2000s music that's in it. So you get kind of things like Bowling for Soup and They Might Be Giants. And, you know, there's all this really kind of good stuff that kind of just stands out. And then there's a couple of old classics, isn't there? Like, you know, the Everybody Wants to Rule the World and True and things like that. So there's a good cast, and I kind of got into that. Do you know how much money it made? Do you want to have a guess?
I would hope a lot, yeah.
Well, it was a budget of $35 million, and it made 86. So it was considered a bit of a disappointment, and one of the reasons why it didn't generate the sequel that everybody was hoping for, because it was considered a bit of a box office disappointment. I think they wanted it to be more. So there you go. Now streaming on Disney Plus, by the way.
Other streaming services are available.
They are. And often better. There's a fact about this that I enjoyed. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, go for it.
So the writers of the movie, who are called Bob Schooley and Mark McCorkle, began writing a Kim Possible live-action movie. They were the writers of the cartoon series Kim Possible, and they were sort of involved in writing this live-action script for Kim Possible, and then they realised, we quite like this, but let's take this idea and make it into a better idea, which is superheroes in high school. So there's some there are some things in here, in the movie, that are apparently would have been found in the live-action Kim Possible, including the mum. If you remember Mrs. Possible from Kim Possible, apparently the character of Will Stronghold's mum is basically based on her.
Oh, wow. I never would have known that, yeah.
So I thought, it's good. And then they it obviously goes through lots of different rewrites and things like that. And it was nicely directed by a guy called Mike Mitchell.
Ah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who I think is one of those, you know, we talked about this in a couple of episodes ago. It's one of those people that is just a working director, maybe isn't out there going to be winning stuff all of the time. But yeah, I mean, so for example, his list of movies is Shrek Forever After, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Chipwrecked, Trolls,
oh dear.
Kung Fu Panda 4. But he is responsible for one of my favourite movies of all time ever.
Sky High?
No, The Lego Movie 2.
Oh.
But you know, it's not...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a good movie, but my favourite bit about it is it's called The Lego Movie 2, The Second Part. I just think it's really, really, really funny. And yeah, he's made lots of films and done... he was been a storyboard artist for various things. And so, yeah, well done him.
I will say I do like his directing, and I do think it works in this film, but some of the line delivery is not great. Like, the school is falling.
Yeah, I know, yeah. And
it wasn't great.
It wasn't great. And actually, the kind of the whole concept of the school in the sky, fine, you know, it was great. And then I like it when they... But it would be really cold, right? If you go that high up, it's normally pretty chilly. There wouldn't be that much oxygen around. And when it lands, when the bus lands, which is quite funny and good and everything else, and then you kind of cut from that CGI scene of the bus landing, you just realise that's just a school. And it turns out it's a university in Southern California. There's nothing particularly original about it. And anyway, I mean, that's a very minor picky point, isn't it? That, you know. That's the kiss on the top of the Empire State Building moment right there. If you're worried about if you're worried that there's that it's really cold and there's not much oxygen, you're not really invested in the movie.
Yeah.
I'd very much like to hear trivia about this movie. You must have some.
Yeah, me too. Oh wait, yeah, my thing. just again repeating the same thing, really. Some of the actors who got the roles in the production and everything, they were contracted not only for a sequel, but also a possible television series on the Disney Channel. Mm. So it's always been there, this idea that there would be a sequel, which is interesting.
If they made a sequel, If they came out and said, okay, we're now doing Sky High 2, where are they now? But they're going to use the original cast and everything else. Would you watch it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, if it was a Netflix series or a movie, probably not, no, because I feel like they wouldn't quite get it right. But maybe a Disney Plus one, yeah, I think they could do it.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair enough. I would definitely watch it. I think it'd be great fun to watch it.
Yeah. This is Danielle Panabaker's first feature film, which is, well, I would say it was obvious, but you know, quite cool. I'm sick of saying interesting. Quite unique.
Which is what we need a thesaurus. Interesting, unique, yeah. Surprising. She's in The Flash, isn't she?
She is, yeah. Caitlin or Killer Frost or Frost or many of the other ones.
And she's somebody else who's gone on to be in things. She kind of ends up in horror movies and things. She's described as a scream queen. She's in Friday the 13th, The Crazies, Piranha. Yeah. And things, and but she's again sort of a working actress and is doing quite well. It's also interesting how old they all are now. You know, she's 37, and you know, Will Strongholds 39 and things like that.
Yeah, I kind of want to see like a multiverse. If they don't do a Sky High spin-off, the multiverse of Daniel Panabaker superhero characters. So she controls plants in this. She controls ice in The Flash. What's next? I want them to all team up, make a movie.
Yeah, I think that would be cool. In the multiverse, all of these things are possible.
Yeah, exactly.
We should pitch some of these, you know. Dear Disney.
Yeah.
Dear Disney, you have two franchises that were made for each other. So let's throw together the Marvel Universe and the Sky High Universe in a multiverse of madness type movie. You can bring all the Marvel characters in.
That's the name of the Doctor Strange film.
Is it? I think it is. Yeah, I knew it came from somewhere. And you can bring all of these people back, and it will be just awesome.
I'd pay.
I'd pay to watch that. I have a piece of trivia.
Even though we made it.
Yeah. I have a piece of trivia which I just want to throw in, even though I don't want to steal your trivia thunder. The writer of the movie, or the writers, Bob Schooley and Mark McCorkle, and then latterly the film director, Mike Mitchell, all decided that the female character should be more intelligent than the boys.
Yeah. Accurate, yeah.
And,
that makes sense.
And because they just felt that was much more realistic in the world of teenagers, and that all of the females shouldn't just be, you know, what you would normally get in superhero movies, kind of screaming and waiting to be rescued. They're all powerful, intelligent women.
I like that. That's a good touch, yeah. Also, quite good for the young female audience, too, that watch it, yeah. Very inclusive. I touched upon this one earlier. Linda Carter, who, of course, was Wonder Woman, or is, depending on your perspective. She was initially given gold bracelets to wear as part of her character, but Warner Brothers shut that down because it's a Disney film.
Wow. Okay, that's interesting. Mm. Yeah. I thought she was quite good in this, Linda Carter. I thought she was very funny.
Yeah, for such a small role, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one was weird, but also not that surprising. During the making of the film, the actor who played Will Stronghold and obviously Mary Elizabeth Winstead had a romantic relationship, while at the same time, Daniel Panabaker and the guy who plays War and Peace also had one. So it's kind of weird how it ended up that way.
Wow. That is...
It happened in Cobra Kai, actually, where there were different relationships per the show.
You can't throw...
It made it really hard to watch.
You sort of can't throw together this cast of young, attractive people and then not expect, you know, that to be a thing, right?
Yeah, it happened to all three of the actors and actresses in Spider-Man, and only one of those couples got engaged. I don't know how true that is at the moment, but I'm pretty sure it is.
There you go. Wow. Which was the couple that got engaged?
It's Tom Holland and Zendaya.
Of course. That's the stupidest question I've ever asked. Everybody knows that. There you go. Out-of-pocket takes on this movie? Any? Must be.
I think my out-of-pocket take is probably just that I want to see a multiverse film.
Yeah. My out-of-pocket take...
It's not that great one.
My out-of-pocket take is that that movie actually exists and you just haven't seen it yet.
That's a good point, yeah. I prefer your out-of-pocket take over mine. Did you notice the SpongeBob cameo?
I didn't notice it, but I did read about it after the thing. So I didn't notice it, but I read it, yeah.
Yeah, I love a random Tom Kenny appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah. I didn't get that, but yeah, I.
So, we always talk about CGI,
mm-hmm.
or usually talk about CGI. I think this was very Spy Kids level of CGI, in the sense that it's not quite real, but it works in a cartoony sort of manner, and probably more so Spy Kids 3. But yeah,
I agree with you about the CGI. I thought it was perfectly passable for 2005. It wasn't quite as bad as Spy Kids 4, and it wasn't anywhere near as bad as Shark Girl Lava Boy. I always get that the wrong way around.
Close enough.
Which has got some of the worst CGI known to humans in it. But I thought this was possibly good CGI for 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think it's only certain moments as well. So like the giant robot fight, whereas some things like the flight and the plants effects and things like that, they're not too bad, yeah. Or maybe the CGI car and the rock guy, too.
The plant effect was actually pretty good, I thought. I think that was probably the one they'd spent the most time on. And it's interesting as well that you mentioned the flying bit, because I actually thought that it was quite cool that he can't fly, so he has to be carried by his wife. It sort of goes back to that empowering women thing, which I thought was, you know, quite a nice touch. I also like the fact that his costume was so designed, his superhero costume was so designed that you couldn't actually see his real body underneath it, you know, because my guess is that Kurt Russell does not have the physique of one of the Hemsworths. And
that's true.
And so they kind of did a really good job of hiding that. I think I'm ready to move to my score now.
Yeah, I think I'm ready to.
I don't have much more to say about this movie. It's not one that's, you know, big on film theory, although there were quite a lot of... There were quite a lot of, is it called the Dutch angle?
Yeah, well.
Is that what
I didn't notice any, but if that's what you mean, yeah.
I thought.
Where the camera tilts slightly.
Yeah, I saw a couple, and I just thought, okay, yeah, there's something happening there. That's the one. Yeah, you can't see that Sam just demonstrated the Dutch angle. So I'm going to go to my score, but you have to go first, because you scored it the last time.
I do, yeah. Okay. I think this film is quite fun from the get-go. I think it starts off quite well. In the middle bit's quite good too, and then the ending's quite... It's all good, I would say. I think it's got some great action scenes. Really good music, I thought. I do like it. The script's decent. Maybe not all of the delivery. So I think I might go up slightly and give it a 7 out of 10 instead, yeah.
Okay, it's interesting. I gave it a 7. Because I do remember enjoying it, and I definitely enjoyed it the second time around. And I'm conflicted on how to score it, because you kind of, in anything like this, there are kind of two ways to score. One is objectively as a piece of filmmaking. The other is just how much you enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed it. So I am actually going to increase my score to 8.
Oh.
I thought this is a...
That's quite generous.
Yeah, perfectly serviceable kids superhero film. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10, which gives this movie 7.5 out of 10 overall.
Wow.
Which is quite surprising, because if you'd shown me the list of movies that we have to watch, and you kind of think, oh, I'm going to have to watch this one. This was one that I would have expected to have not as enjoyed as much as I did.
Yeah, I thought the same, actually. I'm quite glad that it did well enough, yeah. I've enjoyed watching it, and I've enjoyed talking about it as well.
Yeah. So well done them for making a really good movie, which deserves its cult following, and it could well be a modern classic in the making.
What would be your one word review?
Super.
Okay, I'm gonna steal from that review that you read and go with gem.
Cool, I like it. Well, I guess it is therefore my turn to choose the movie for next week, yes?
It is, yes. What'll it be?
Well, I'm glad you've asked. I am going to just go straight into this. We're going big, as we sometimes do, And I think we've been waiting for this one. And so we are going to go with the 2003 classic movie, Hulk.
Okay, get in. I'm actually looking forward to it.
Well, I think as I get to give my score first, we probably have been waiting for this, because I think you and I would agree that we did not enjoy this movie, correct?
Correct, yes.
And I definitely have not seen it since I sat in the cinema and watched it with you. So it has been well over 20 years, and I'm going to cut straight to the chase. I didn't like it. I thought it was really boring. I'm going to give it 1.
Oh, that's generous.
Well, I did consider giving it 0, and then I thought, unless I watch it again and give it 0, my score can only go up, where I wanted to give myself some wiggle room with 1.
Fair enough. I'm slightly different. I think I've seen it about 10 years ago and vowed never to watch it again because I got bored. But I'm kind of looking forward to watching it again anyway, because I think it'll be hilarious. And from what I've seen on the internet lately, it is hilarious. So I think, similar to you, I think I'm going to go with a 1 out of 10 as well. It's not going to go up. I'd be shocked if it went up. But there you go.
All right. So the Hulk movie, 2003, has scored a massive 2. So I am very much looking forward to going away and watching a 2.5-hour movie that I have scored 1.
Yeah.
It's when you start questioning your lifestyle decisions, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
You know, we always do the day of the week.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely brilliant day to do this.
Okay.
One pops up on your computer. I wonder if you've got anything that I have.
I've seen a few things today.
Yeah, me too. What have you got?
So it's the equinox, one of them.
Yep.
Persian New Year and the International Day of Happiness.
I got the International Day of Happiness, which I think is really nice. It is the Great American Meat Out, which is a US thing in which they kind of proclaim for animal rights. And it's not what it sounds like. It's not like... you know, we eat meat. It's actually the opposite of that. It's quite good.
Right.
But my favourite one, and this I think would appeal to regular listeners, is that it's World Sparrow Day.
Wow.
So today we raise awareness of the humble house sparrow.
Nice.
So if you do celebrate World Sparrow Day or World Happiness Day or Meat Out, then enjoy.
I want to bring something up. Because the computers at work for some reason don't let me see the seconds ticking by on a clock,
mm-hmm.
I've had to find an alternative way to do that. And the website that I use has a quote every day. And I wanted to read this quote out because it's funny.
All right.
It's by Tom Lehrer, I think that's how you say it. Life is like a piano. What you get out of it depends on how you play it. And I thought that's funny because I don't know how to play the piano. So what does that make my life?
Essentially, what you're saying is, unless you can play the piano, life's going to be rubbish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who is this person?
I don't know. And on that bombshell.
And on that
trending video of melted cheese.
Oh, oh.
Wow.
Is there an actual trending video of melting cheese?
It says, it's just a bit, melted cheese, goodness for a satisfying breakfast, by Hungry Mom Cooking. Shout out there.
So, yeah, if
not sponsored.
If you're listening. So is this a suggested video that pops up?
It's like in the same place where I get my little what day it is.
There you go. Wow. So if you're out there celebrating World Happiness Day and Sparrow Day and Meat Out Day and making cheese... and not playing the piano, you're our kind of guy or woman, person.
Yeah.
Excellent. Please do email us if you have any questions at thebenefitfindsightpodcast@gmail.com. And I think on some of those bombshells, we should say goodbye. Bye.
Bye. Have to be pathetic. Bye. Don't hit guinea pigs.
Don't hit guinea pigs, ever. That would be bad. Is that like a public service announcement?
It is, yeah. Mostly because I accidentally said hitting guinea pigs. Please don't hit guinea pigs.
Yeah. Okay. So if you're out there and you are considering hitting a guinea pig, just remember that guinea pigs have feelings too. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see, were the movies truly awful, or did they change history?